Hey, ding-dongs, I'm Jamie.
I'm Richard.
And this is Explain It to Jamie, the political comedy podcast in which I, Jamie, a politically innocent but curious young man, have the complicated political happenings of the world explained to me by my politically savvy friend, Richard Lamb.
That's me.
Hey, everybody.
Yeah, good to be here. You know, it's sometimes exhausting fitting my enormous brain into this tiny room Jamie lives in, but I manage for the sake of education, everybody.
Yeah, I have the same problem with my penis in this tiny room.
I was going to mention, it's like being in a room with, you know, those like collapsible tubes that you used to have when you were a kid that you could like crawl through. You know what I'm talking about? Like when you were a kid, you're playing, they're like big tubes, they're kind of like spirally and you can push them to be like flat hoops, but then they open up and they're like crawling tubes.
Yes.
Being in this room with your penis is like being in a room filled to bursting with those tubes, except it's fleshy and pulsating. I don't know. All right.
Can you feel my heartbeat?
Anyway, thanks for listening to Describe Jamie's Penis this week. Like, share, subscribe, sound off in the comments.
Yeah. How you doing, Rick?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. It's nice to be back in Canada. Already been to the hospital 19 and a half times for extremely frivolous reasons.
Yeah, and they have to give you just a salute and a high five on your way out.
That's right. The doctor has to sing all of O Canada to me while looking me in the eyes without blinking in both official languages.
Yeah, and he knows that you're wasting his time, but he can't do shit about it.
Nope, and the government pays for it.
Yeehaw!
You want to start smoking?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Yeah.
Let's get into it. What do you say?
I say, Jamie, what is it you want to know about this week?
I want to know about North Korea.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
So topical. We do need to like fully say that Jamie proposed this topic before this was a big topical topic.
Yeah.
Like before any of this fun action over the last couple days, Jamie pitched this topic. So I'm not going to say Jamie's like the Minority Report prophet, but I mean, I'm thinking it right now.
Yeah. Yeah. What can I say, Richard? I mean, me and Kim Jong Il and Kim Jong Un have a couple things in common. That is,
all three of you are dead.
Yeah. We're all dead. And we're here to tell you horrible tales of the future. You know, we're all, I was going to say we're all gifts to humanity from God.
Nice.
Imbued with superpowers and incredible golf ability.
You were all born on a Korean mountain, dropped to the ground by an eagle while a decktuple rainbow sounded off overhead.
That's right. And God saluted and high-fived and sang O Canada as I walked by.
In both official languages.
That's right.
Korean and extra Korean. Okay, great. Well, North Korea, you know, it's gonna be a hoot. It's gonna be a holler.
Yeah.
It's gonna be a series of extremely bad glasses perched on the end of our face.
It is, after all, the most hilarious, horrifyingly scary country on the planet.
And with that, why don't we punch into this theme song?
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
What a sweet jam.
Okay, so Jamie, what do you know about North Korea?
Everything. Next question.
Nice. Nailed it. No, I actually do know you went through kind of a North Korea fandom. Fandom's a weird word. Phase a couple years ago?
Yeah, I was very seriously considering going.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I really wanted to go, and I was looking into all the things you needed and the visas you had to have and how much it would cost and so on and so forth. Yeah. And I was sort of talked out of it by, I think, I don't want to say you, I think maybe you had some like, light encouragement, but my parents were like, do not go to North Korea.
Well, the thing is, what's funny is that was like, what, 3 years ago now? And it's actually way easier to go to North Korea now than it was then.
Yeah.
I read a bit about it, and all you have to do is you go through, there's travel agencies in China that send Westerners there. It costs like $200 US a day to be in North Korea. And as long as you don't do anything shifty. As long as you basically go where they tell you to go and do what they tell you
and
to do.
Don't touch stuff.
Westerners, yeah. Quit touching stuff.
I mean, the real troubling thing is that when you go through, like in the airport where you land in the airport in North Korea and you go through customs, you give them your passport and they don't give it back until you leave.
Right.
So, like, you are there and they will not let you leave. Is that poor... what was he? He's American. That poor American kid who went there. No. Was
yeah,
he
Otto yeah. Tambien.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. He went there and he stole a flag or something like that.
It was a propaganda poster.
Yeah, he stole a poster.
That's what they said he did. Who knows?
There was another guy that threw a snowball or something like that and was... Might have been him. I don't remember. And he, you know, was detained there in a work camp for... 7 years.
Yeah,
and
he
died.
Ended up dying because of some sort of head injury he had or something like that. Malnourishment or something. He was in a coma.
He fell down the stairs for 7 years.
So there
was a short while where I wanted to go and because it's like sort of the last, well, not the last, but it's one of the places on Earth that you go and it's like stepping onto another planet.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a different world with different rules, and you know, I wanted to be propagandized.
Yeah,
you know, I wanted to feel.
It's like the only place in the world you can go, and the first thing you're going to see is not a Starbucks.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
This is a good time to mention our first sponsor for the show, Tourism North Korea. Everybody, you know, why not try something a little different this year for the holidays?
Yeah.
You know, spend your Christmas in North Korea, but don't mention Christmas and don't mention Santa Claus.
Yeah,
he's not okay in North Korea. He's a no go.
Yeah. He's their devil.
they have a Santa Claus based like anti-theology. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
North Korean children are taught that if you're, you know, if you don't pray hard enough to Kim Jong-un's weird poster every day, that Santa Claus will creep up from your chimney, not down. He goes up in North Korea from the bowels of the earth.
Yeah.
And will drag your child kicking and screaming down in there to be like a reverse elf.
Yeah. That sounds like actually a lot of German fairy tales.
Yeah, all the German fairy tales are really murdery and a little
nightmarish.
Yeah, and like kind of racist.
Yeah, well, they're all built around behaving, right? Like it's all like there's a lesson. It's like obey your fucking parents.
Well, it's a good thing the Germans never like externalized all of those monster tales onto anybody else.
Yeah, it's a good thing that all of that like horrifying imagery shown to children never manifested in a real life situation.
Yeah, yeah, that's really good. No, the Holocaust, guys. It happened. It's real.
Yeah, and North Korea did it.
Yeah. Well, actually, I mean, well, no, North Korea didn't do it. But World War II is a big part of North Korea's history. Okay, so. Really, let's take this as an opportunity, this show, to talk about what's happening now with North Korea, because I'm sure it's kind of a weird situation to decode from the outside. Mm-hmm. Like, this is, the day we're recording this is Thursday, August the 10th of 2017, if you're listening to this from the future, or if you're Jamie listening to this from the future just using his mental powers.
Yeah. I did, so, and it's very good.
Right now, there's like, you know, Donald Trump's been rage-tweeting about at North Korea all the time, and a lot of people are saying a lot of things, and North Korea has been testing out its intercontinental ballistic missile capabilities and proving that it has much farther and more advanced intercontinental ballistic missile capabilities than it has had in the past, and it's threatening now to launch a splashdown missile strike on Guam. So we'll talk about all those things, but that's where we're at right now if you're listening from the future. But before we really delve into that stuff, let's roll back a little bit. So Korea is a peninsula that's located in Asia. A peninsula, you know, it's like a piece of land that kind of juts out from the ground. It's like a penis. Yeah, like a penis. Like
Florida.
Yeah, like Florida. It's like if an island was a thrust stage instead of in the round. So it's got like water on three sides.
Whoa.
It like sticks out into
geeky
the water.
Theater
that's the
reference.
Theater reference. Yeah.
We just lost half of our listenership.
Yeah. So Korea is a peninsula, and basically for all of its history, for hundreds and hundreds of years, it's been sandwiched between China, Russia, and Japan, and has kind of endured a series of brutal occupations by all three of those nations at different times. You know, like the Mongols really fucked up Korea, and then China tried to really... Oh, and then Japan occupied it for a couple hundred, for a while in the 1600s, and then the Chinese Empire occupied Korea, and that was not a good time. And then Japan again in like 1905 occupied Korea, and that continued until the end of World War II, when Korea was literally split in half by two dudes who were interns working at the U.S. State Department. You may notice this is a theme in modern international relations. Two dudes working at the U.S. State Department drew a line in the Korean Peninsula at the 38th parallel.
Because
it sounded cool or something, or it was like about halfway.
Right.
And Russia took over the top half, North Korea, and America took over the bottom half, South Korea.
Right.
And that's why we have the Koreas, North and South Korea, that we have now. And Koreans have, like all people who are kind of a single ethnic group sandwiched in between massive empires, they have like a very strong sense of identity, right? Like being in this big kind of pressure cooker sandwiched between all these more powerful, much angrier and fightier nations than them, has created a real strong sense of Korean identity. And Korea has a very strong culture. It's just small, right? It's like geographically very small, but it has a technologically, has had a traditionally very technologically advanced culture at different points in history, and has like a lot of art and sense of itself,
and
aesthetic.
They're all incredible StarCraft players.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's actually true. Like, there's a reason for that. That's like a real thing. They're all insane at esports.
When I used to play StarCraft online, and Korean people would log in to the game,
you'd see it.
People would
their
quit.
Username. Yeah, because you'd see their Korean.
You'd see the Korean characters. People would leave the game.
Yeah.
Because you couldn't win.
I mean, like, I'm going to digress in our historical discussion here. That happened because, for a long time, we in our generation have this kind of image of North Korea as being, like, really fucked up and backwards, which was true a lot more when we were teenagers, and is actually, like, less true now.
Right.
It still is weird, and we'll talk about it a little bit, but, for the first part of North Korea and South Korea's existences, North Korea actually industrialized and advanced a lot faster than South Korea, which is like a pretty rural area, which a lot of agriculture is the main economic driver. Mm. So North Korea became an industrial country a lot faster than South Korea, and South Korea's development really accelerated in kind of like the late 70s and the 80s. And part of the fact that it developed so late meant that all of the broadband internet was put in. Like, they never had dial-up internet in Korea. They all got broadband, and they all got it in the late 90s at the same time, mm-hmm. right? It was like a big national project. And there was also, at the same time that all the houses were wired with broadband in the late 90s, there was, like, I think, like a popular, like, starter PC bundle that you could buy, and it came with StarCraft. StarCraft right. was, like, the new hot game at the time. So everyone just had StarCraft and the internet at the same time. So people got great at StarCraft. Right. Everyone played it. It was, like, a whole generation of Koreans who played it.
Yeah. And the internet in Korea is, like, 300 times faster than, like, the internet you would have in your house.
Right, but actually, everything in Korea is 300 times faster than everything in North America, including cars, people, right. the women, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, baby.
This is a good time to mention our other sponsor, Tourism South Korea. Come for the fast internet, stay for the fast women. Tourism South Korea did not endorse this announcement.
But they did make up that slogan.
Yeah, that's right. I'm just doing what Google tells me.
Yeah.
Okay, so Korea, like I said, occupied by the Japanese through the entire first half of the 20th century. It was split in half in 1945, and
great year.
Yeah, that's right. the U.S. kind of kept a military presence there, but allowed South Korea to set up its own democracy, and it kind of became its own country. It didn't have democracy until 1945. Like, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And the Soviets, Stalin, instilled this guy as the the kind of leader of North Korea in sort of the same model as Stalinist Russia. And his name was Kim Il-sung. Mm. Kim Il-sung, he's kind of an interesting dude. We don't know a huge amount of super concrete details about his early life, but he was a Korean guy who was born under Japanese occupation in the early 20th century and basically lived most of his life outside of Korea. Like, he lived in China with his family. He was in Korea sometimes, but he also was like a guerrilla fighter. So he was like fighting with other Koreans against the Japanese occupation, trying to liberate Korea. And he was also in the Soviet army during World War II, in this kind of like combined Chinese-Korean battalion that was fighting to liberate China and Korea together, right? Mm. Because China was also occupied by Japan in the Second World War. So so from the very beginning...
All of China?
Yeah.
China.
China, man.
Was... That's racist, Richard. China.
Touché, sir.
China was occupied by Japan.
Yeah.
But Japan's so small.
Yeah, Japan is Japan is a super dense country, right. They also had a lot of, you know, like Koreans and stuff fighting for them that they had sort of like enslaved and forced to fight for them. And so there's hundreds of millions of Japanese people, and they projected their power across all of Asia. Like, they didn't just take over, they took over the Philippines, they took over like all the Pacific Islands, basically. Like, there was a legitimate fear that Japan was going to take over almost all of Asia. Like, the Axis of, like, wow. Germany took over all of Europe, Japan was going to take over the other half.
Oh my god. Okay, I think we need to do an episode on
World War II.
Maybe World War II.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I always sort of assumed that Germany was the big banger, and Italy and Japan were just sort of hedging their bets and joining with the one they thought was going to win.
No, no. In fact, the Japanese like started fighting in taking over China before World War II in Europe started. Whoa. Like, the war was already on there. What's funny is that...
Oh my god, you know, I feel like such a dum-dum.
Well, you know what's interesting? I went to that huge World War II museum in New Orleans when I was there, and Canada did not fight in the Pacific Theater against Japan. Right. There were some Canadians fighting against the Japanese because Canada was still part of the British Empire then. I mean, I guess we technically still are, but whatever. But Canadian troops were part of British troops that were defending Hong Kong because Hong Kong was still part of Britain. But they surrendered. They had to surrender in the early, I think, 39 or 40. Yeah, they surrendered on Christmas Day. The Canadian troops had to surrender, and British troops, to the Japanese forces that invaded Hong Kong.
Right, right. Yeah. Oh, and that's why there's a lot of racism towards Japan within Asian cultures.
That is correct. Oh, the reason everyone hates Japan is because someone's grandma was like...
Horribly oppressed by Japan.
Yeah, could remember being oppressed by Japan. I mean, in fact, like, my own family, like, my grandma still is pretty belligerent about Japanese people. And, you know, she's a Chinese lady who lives in Canada now. But, like, and she hasn't lived in China since she was 16. And she holds, like, very few prejudices of any kind. Like, you know, I've heard her be totally fine with homosexuality, even though she's, like, an old Chinese lady who comes from a rural area.
Right.
I've heard her be totally fine with, you know, obviously, like, I have an interracial family. Like, she didn't really care about that. But, like, the Japanese, there's still kind of a, like, very visceral prejudice that she holds. And, I mean, when I learned about our family's history a little bit, like, my great-grandma, her mom, starved to death during World War II because they had no food under Japanese occupation, and she was giving all of her food that she was going to be eating to all the kids to keep them alive.
Wow.
So, like, I guess I would understand how you could be mad about that.
Sure. Did you hear about that old Japanese man they found on the island?
And he
thought the war was still
happening. Yeah, he was like some dude in the jungle or whatever.
He'd been surviving there for decades and decades.
Well, let's do a brief digression on this. So, like, I didn't know anything almost about the Pacific Theater other than the Battle of Midway and Okinawa and Iwo Jima and then the nuclear bombs. Like, you know all those words, right? You've heard of all that stuff. But, like, Canada didn't fight in the Pacific Theater, but in the American War Museum, it's half of the museum. is the fight against Japan. And it was as brutal a war, if not more brutal a war, than the one in Europe. I mean, it didn't have the cold, mechanical genocide of the Holocaust, but it had insane atrocities against civilians, like the Rape of Nanking, which you probably have heard about, where Japanese soldiers, when they invaded Nanking, basically murdered and raped
everybody.
To like 200,000 civilians in a couple weeks. There were like, you know, big open pits of people dead that they had executed and stuff. Anyway, and the Japanese were so aggressive, and they were so indoctrinated by their emperor and their military that they all fought to the death, and all the civilians had been told that the Americans were like rapists and murderers and devils and would kill themselves when the Americans defeated the Japanese armies in Japanese territory. So when they went through like kind of distant islands held by Japan, and when they took Okinawa, like it was like 99.7% of all the Japanese people died in those places. Like no one surrendered, none of the soldiers surrendered. They would all fight to the death or kill themselves. And there were like civilians like throwing themselves off cliffs and stuff when the Americans came into the town. So part of the reason the nuclear bombs were used at all is they didn't want to invade Japan. That was the next thing they were going to do. America and Russia together were going to do a land invasion of Japan.
Whoa.
And they were like, we might have to kill every single Japanese person on Earth. Like, they might all end up dying if we do this, because everywhere else we've been, there's been literally 99.7% casualty rates among the Japanese. It was crazy.
Wow.
The modern Japan is so psychologically different from it, from the way it was, partly because I think there was a lot of shame about those atrocities.
Sure. Oh,
they have a weird relationship to it, too, to be honest. I was there as a high school student. Sometimes they don't fully reckon with their history. Sometimes they do. I don't know. Life's anyway, complicated.
North Korea.
So that's the kind of, but that's where we find ourselves.
Right.
So Kim Il-sung, the first Kim, he's lived his entire life fighting to liberate Korea from Japan.
Yeah.
Literally fighting. He's a guerrilla fighter in the like countryside. And finally, he gets his taste of a free Korea, but half of Korea is still under the control of a foreign power in his mind. Like, the American army has a huge presence to this day in South Korea. So to him, like, he sees it as it's still occupied, half of Korea. And for his entire life and well into our lives, for his life, his life's goal and the life's goal he's passed on to his son and his grandson was to reunite the Korean Peninsula as a single Korean ethnic state. Now, there is definitely like a weird racial aspect to this where he's like, the Koreans are like the strongest people and we should, you know, have our perfect state where Koreans can be the one true race. There's definitely like a little bit of that going on,
right?
Or a lot of that going on. This is what the Korean War was about. So in the Korean War started in 1950, and literally in 1950, just tens of thousands of North Korean troops streamed across the border to retake South Korea and make it part of North Korea. And this prompted a huge military response from the U.S., right? Because North Korea had really strong ties to Russia, so they were technically considered a communist country, although they really are not a communist country at all, which we can talk about a little bit.
Right.
But
dictatorship.
Yeah, they're like a right-wing dictatorship. They're not very left-wing at all, right? Like, the people don't, there's no, very little redistribution. Even though the government is in control of everything and plans the whole economy, there's no redistribution, and the workers themselves don't, like, determine what gets made or who gets it. And it's all controlled by a very small bureaucracy of elites who kind of leverage everything for their own gain. So it's not really, there's no class consciousness there, you know, like, so it's pretty intellectually different from communism. It doesn't really resemble anything that we would call communism at all.
Right.
Except for the fact that they like the color red, I guess. And there's, and he was buddies with Mao and Stalin at the very beginning, but he took a pretty different path.
Right.
But at the time, America's worried that this was the start of Russian communism taking over the whole world. Mm. And they had this policy which is called containment, where it was like anywhere that the communists try to gain territory, we will fight them basically as hard as we can for like it's a fight for survival. Mm. So America piles troops into Korea, fights, finally retakes South Korea back to the 38th parallel, right, that border. And then General MacArthur, who actually was also a general from World War II, who was defending the Philippines, got kicked out by the Japanese, and then he's famously sort of insane and was like, I will return. He apparently screamed, I will return, as he was like fleeing the Philippines, and like kind of made even some questionable strategic decisions to make sure he took back the Philippines. Like, anyway, he really wanted to then invade all of North Korea and take all of North Korea from the South. And so MacArthur, he did this. He tried to attack North Korea. When China saw that North Korea was under attack, China sent tons of troops in. They repelled the Americans back. So the Korean War was this 3-year total butchery stalemate. Whoa. Over this 38th parallel back and forth.
Holy cow.
Yeah, it's, I know.
Kind of, but not really, the Middle East of its day.
Absolutely.
Like, everybody's piling in.
Yeah.
Wow.
Absolutely. And once China was kind of pissed off and Russia was kind of pissed off and they were all threatening to kind of really strongly intervene, there was a lot of fear there would be nuclear escalation.
What year is this?
We're in 1953 now. Yeah.
So Vietnam's coming.
Vietnam's coming, but it hasn't happened yet. This is the first military conflict of the Cold War, is the Korean War.
Wow.
They're worried that it would go nuclear, so they all agreed that they would just reset the border at the 38th parallel, and there would be a 2.5-mile demilitarized zone at the 38th parallel where nobody would control it. Mm. You've probably heard of the Korean demilitarized zone.
Yeah, it's a place you can go and look over the thing and you see forest and you're like, ah, that's North Korea. Right?
I mean, everything you said is right. No, it's,
there's a bunch of landmines.
Yeah, it's like probably they say
like
it's
guns always pointing. And
yeah, it's like the
that.
Most heavily militarized area probably on Earth. There's like,
which is ironic.
Bunkers. I know, right? There's like bunkers everywhere on both sides. There's artillery. There's landmines. There's electric fences. There's like every single thing you could think of to prevent a land invasion. Mm. It's there. But also, because the actual territory of the demilitarized zone itself, you can't go in it or build anything there. It's actually this crazy, unspoiled nature preserve. Mm. Like, there's tons of animals and plants and stuff that are flourishing in there with absolutely no human intervention at all. Right. Kind of interesting tidbit. Mm. Anyway, Kim Il-sung never relinquishes his kind of idea that he's going to reunite all of Korea into one thing. And as North Korea develops, he kind of starts creating this like weird mythology about himself, which a lot of dictatorships do. And under him, certainly, you know, it's weird. It's like Saddam Hussein level weird, or you know, President Erdogan in Turkey. He's kind of, you know, it's like that weird cult of personality stuff where you talk about how great your leader is and how loyal you are to him all the time. Mm. But it's not like North Korea weird yet.
Right.
That really starts with his son. So Kim Il-sung dies in 1994. By the end, he had a tumor the size of a baseball on the back of his neck. And he was, they forbade anyone from publishing photos of it. But there's a couple photos you can see of it. It's like really gnarly. And he appointed his son, Kim Jong-il, as the successor.
Right.
Now, Kim Jong-il was raised, again, mostly in China. He was alive during the Second World War, and as when he came of age, he served all kinds. He's basically totally groomed to take over the country. He served in all kinds of different bureaucracies. He saw.
He went to school at Oxford or something.
Yeah, that's right. He went to school in the West.
Yeah.
And he worked many different jobs, and slowly assumed more and more responsibilities in the country, and
then started doing heroin.
Yeah. Well, I mean, all kinds of crazy shit happens in North Korea. I'm not surprised if somebody did heroin at some point who was one of those leader guys. Anyway, under him, is when North Korea really becomes a crazy military state. Like, he brought this, his philosophy, I can't remember the Korean word for it now, I feel bad, but basically it was like, the military is the best, and we should all treat it like it's the best, and everyone's, like, kind of a big part of the military apparatus. The military, yay! And so it's under him that a lot of, like, the stuff that we kind of associate from our youth, like the crazy Team America World Police stuff, you know, that kind of starts with him. Now, I feel like Team America World Police and the like really kind of like ruined all of us understanding Korea, because it seems hilarious and kind of quaint.
Yeah.
And it is all those things. All the weird ridiculousness of it, like him capturing, like he had a famous South Korean director and a famous South Korean actress, like he had them kidnapped from South Korea and taken to North Korea so they can make movies for him, because he's like obsessed with movies.
And they love the 1990 Chicago Bulls.
Yeah, so that's
They like brought Dennis Rodman.
Yeah, that was Kim Jong Un, I think.
No, Ill.
Was it Ill?
It was Ill.
I thought it was Un.
No, this was before Kim Jong Il died.
That's hilarious. Oh my God. Yeah, so like stuff like that. That's all real. And it's like these people have concentrated basically all the wealth in their country in like a couple hundred people's hands. So they have a lot of bizarre time on their hands to indulge in all their weird
there's like hobbies. There's this temple that like people pilgrimage to. I forget. There's some level of mandatory. Like not everybody in the country has to, but you know, if you go to school at a certain level, you have to. You go to this temple, and it's full of, like, treasures and trophies that other world leaders have given to North Korea, because it's, I'm using heavy air quotes.
Right.
Yeah, everything in it is clearly, from an outside view, like, manufactured by the government of North Korea.
Right.
Like, Canada didn't give you that.
Yeah,
exactly.
I don't know what you're talking about. I send Kim Jong Il, you know, nice 3/4 of my income all the time. How he controls the weather, Jamie. Hey, how else are our crops going to grow if we don't appease him?
Yeah, you are right.
He did say he could control the weather, and apparently North Koreans do believe that.
And he shot 18 for 18 in a golf
game. Yeah, so there's all these like crazy lies about him that obviously are hilarious. They're like, how tiny a man do you have to be to need to tell everyone you shot 18 holes in one in golf?
And that's like kind of a bizarre, you know, reality to think about having, of being like, you know, I will go down in history as this person that I wasn't. You know, like I everything that the history books will say about me will be untrue, and I like to live with that. Of like, you know what I mean? Like your legacy is not actually your legacy. It's a string of lies that you made up.
Yeah.
And there's no lie big enough to fill your heart.
I definitely feel like most dictators are not overly concerned with like, oh, I hope people remember what I actually did. I feel like they're just like, oh, this hole inside me is so huge. The only thing that could fill it is me, the rush of adrenaline I get when people think that I did a backflip and kicked a unicorn and broke its neck.
Wow. I just think of like when I was a little kid, I remember I lied. I don't remember what I lied about, but I lied about something that was massive at the time, but like minuscule now to think about it. And I think it was my mom maybe said to me, or my dad, I think, said, he's like, you know, you obviously I don't like it when you lie, but like the person that suffers when you lie is yourself. Because you label yourself as a liar. And so you have to act the way that you want to label yourself. And you need to like, so if you want to be seen and want to see yourself as an honest person, you have to be honest first. And that's the big disadvantage to lying.
And that's why I act like a Dalmatian.
Yeah, you do.
Thank you.
And someday you'll be a Dalmatian.
Okay,
where's the fire?
Yeah, so, but as, you know, they're fucking ridiculous. It's true, they're so ridiculous. They're so funny. They're so weird. Like that's all true. At the same time,
horrifying.
Yeah, well, at the same time, basically, the main political thing that always gets them in hot water is nukes.
Right.
And it always has been nukes. North Korea has not been a nuclear power for most of its history, but it successfully developed nuclear capabilities, or was very close to that point, in the early 2000s. And this was kind of the first time it really came into a lot of our consciousness, when George W. Bush gave his, like, Axis of Evil speech, and kind of identified North Korea as one of, like, the evil countries in the world or whatever. Basically, that was a fight over nukes. And there were all kinds of theories about why North Korea has nukes. Some people say they're a deterrent. Like, nuclear deterrence is a concept of international relations, which basically says if everybody has nukes, no one's going to go to war because the threat of nuclear annihilation is so clear that diplomatic solutions will always be more more desirable, right? So in a way, everyone will be safer if everyone has a nuke. Now, that is a little bit like everyone will be safer if every public school teacher had a gun and there'd never be a school shooting. I understand the logic, and I think the logic is sort of sound, and certainly, I guess the logic has kept us all alive this long, right? But the thing is, North Korea doesn't need nukes to deter America from attacking it, right? Because Korea is small, and Seoul, the like capital of South Korea, is within artillery range of North Korea. So they say that the entire... all of Seoul, which has 25 million people living in it, is plotted on a grid in a 3-block radius, and North Korean artillery can literally put artillery shells in every single spot on the grid within 3 minutes. They could just completely devastate it. And that's not a nuke. You don't need a nuke to do that. They've been able to do that since 1945. Right. So, and that's the deterrent that they have, right? So they don't need nukes as a deterrent. And anyone who you hear on the news who tells you that North Korea is developing nukes as a deterrent to the U.S., that person is wrong, I think.
Right.
Based on what I have read about North Korean policy, and based on the very smart people who I've listened to on North Korean policy, who I think are right, I think this is correct. They don't need nukes as a deterrent. So that's not what's happening right now, and that wasn't what was happening in the early 2000s. What they do want is... I should just keep going. So they developed some nuclear capability in the early 2000s. That was like a big kerfuffle. Fast forward to now. What they've done now is they have shrunk the size of their nuclear warhead to the point where it's probably likely they could fit it onto an intercontinental ballistic missile. And they've shown that now they have the missiles that can send the nuclear warhead as far as the continental United States and possibly even as far as the east coast of the continental United States.
Wow.
Which is a big deal. And they're now doing this thing where they're going to splash down some missiles by Guam, which is a U.S. territory where there's a huge U.S. military base in the Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not going to actually hit it with the missiles.
They're just going to prove that they can get them.
Yeah, they're going to put them in the water, like, you know, 40 miles away from it or something, and just kind of show that they have this capability. Now, you might be wondering, why the hell would they do that? Like, that doesn't make any sense. Well, here's what I think. And this comes regurgitated from a much smarter person who I heard on another podcast, which was called War College, which I recommend listening to. Their episode on What Does North Korea Want? It was really good. Basically, North Korea wants to appear scary enough to South Korea that South Korea will slowly... like kind of elect to have more and more ties to North Korea and surrender more and more of its power to North Korea. And then finally, when they're so enmeshed that the U.S. can't just blow North Korea up anymore, North Korea wants to reunite the peninsula and kind of take over with the North Korean system as like the main system.
Right.
And they're in like a pretty good shape to do that right now because South Korea is about to have a huge election in May. And in South Korea, the political left are like pro more ties with North Korea. And the political right are like hard line, we need security is the number one thing, anti-North Korea people. That's like the main political issue in South Korea. But the conservatives who are on the right, they're anti-North Korea, have had this huge scandal and they're fucked in this election. No one is going to vote for them. They've just been devastated by this huge scandal. The president had to like resign. And so it's basically between the left. So it's for sure a thing that somebody who's probably a lot more favorable to North Korea is going to be the president of South Korea soon. And so a lot of the you know, these smart people I was listening to that all this nuclear stuff is really just to intimidate South Korea into wanting to give away more concessions to North Korea.
Right.
So what I mean is like This game has been in place since 1945.
But, Richard, you're forgetting that we have the most capable, savvy, intelligent man at the helm of the country that can drive this baby.
Let's go on. Don't stop.
Old madcap Donnie Corndog Trump
himself. That's right. Donald Trump clearly can see straight through this three-dimensional, 12-dimensional chess that's happening right now. And clearly he understands the complicated nuances of the political situation in South Korea.
Yeah.
No, he is making everything so much worse. Yeah. Nobody likes what he's doing, especially in Korea.
Yeah.
Like, he's playing right into North Korea's hands, basically. Because North Korea, from abroad, says, like, oh, the Americans are ridiculous and belligerent and unfair to us, which this definitely does kind of seem like,
right?
Because it's like, well, you're a country with 12,000 nukes. Why doesn't this country get to have 3 nukes? You know what I mean? Like, it does seem a little petty.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, North Korea tells its own people that America flaps its gums a lot, but actually isn't really very strong and is too afraid to attack North Korea, which, like, and, you know, Donald Trump threatened to move a carrier group into the North Korean's ocean space and then didn't actually do it. So now they're going, ha, see, we were right. Anyway, all this is to say, I feel like sometimes we think of North Korea as like this totally wacky, weird theme park that's like, it's like Richie Rich, but creepy and Asian. You know, like, do you remember that movie, Richie Rich?
Oh, yeah.
It's with Macaulay Culkin,
mm-hmm.
where he has like a McDonald's.
It wasn't Macaulay Culkin.
It wasn't?
No.
Who was it?
It was a guy that kind of looks like Macaulay Culkin.
Are you fucking serious?
I am serious.
Have to go. I'm sorry. I have to Google this. You just blew my mind.
Yes, sir.
Richie Rich, cast. Macaulay Culkin, Richie Rich.
Really?
The movie? Are you talking about the movie or the TV show?
Oh, the TV show is what I was talking about.
Oh, I'm talking about the movie. The old movie from when we were kids.
Okay.
With Macaulay Culkin. It totally has Macaulay Culkin.
What was I thinking of?
I don't know, man.
I don't know either. Macaulay Culkin?
Macaulay Culkin. He's number one.
Anyway, Richie Rich.
Sometimes we think of it as like Richie Rich, right? Where it's like, ah, I just live in this crazy house and I have all this rich stuff. Like, I just built the world's coolest water park, which is something that Kim Jong-un actually did.
I was thinking of Sinbad. What is it?
First Kid. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I was thinking of First Kid.
No, it's very different.
Yeah.
Some key differences.
But okay. Go on.
Could you imagine if they made First Kid about Barron Trump?
I smell a remake.
Oh my God,
Sinbad, what are you up to?
Yeah, if you're listening, if you're a showrunner at NBC, give us a call about this. This is some hot HBO. We want HBO right now on the phone.
Yeah.
This is some hot pitch we got for you. So sometimes it's like, this country is a crazy place where all these random people are forced to do all these like funny dances, and it's like kind of harmless. Maybe they starved for a while, but whatever, we don't think about it.
Right.
And again, my perception of them was that they are starving and terrible, but actually for the last several years, they've been okay.
Yeah.
The starving part happened in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, I mean, there is a couple of weird things. Like, we don't know the exact population of North Korea.
Right.
Like, because we know what they tell us it is, but we also don't know how many people are in prison camps there.
Right.
And it's, like, estimated to be in the millions.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, something I was hearing was that, because I've heard in documentaries and stuff that, you know, like, people flip off North Korean guards all the time in North Korea.
Right.
You know, like, there's like, a video footage of this North Korean guard, like, bothering this old woman with a, like, carrying a rice wagon or whatever, and he's bothering her, and she, like, slaps him a bunch and, like, pushes him, and other people come to her defense and, like, push him away, which is not what you'd expect.
Right. Right?
So there are people, like, they are governing, but, like, not in the sort of...
Yeah, it's not like
dictatey way, but the young generation, the millennials of North Korea, are swinging back the other way.
Interesting.
So it's like, yeah, so it's kind of opposite to here in that, like, our the parents are like, ah, fucking Kim Jong-un, you know, like, he's a problem, but their kids are like, no, North Korea, nationalists.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, kind of interesting.
Yeah. And when I mean, all this to say is that all that shit is really crazy and weird, and they are kind of goofy, but they're not dumb. They're still running a country, and they have a clear goal, and their goal is to reunify all of Korea into one state. And it has been the goal of, it was this Kim Il-sung's obsession, and it's been passed on to his kids. And it's certainly the goal of the people who are the government, who aren't just the crazy leader. You know, like all the other people in charge of stuff, this is what they've been working on for years.
Yeah.
So North Korea's nuclear program is a huge, it's part of that. It's just, it's a big step in the direction of getting South Korea to sort of capitulate to North Korea, because North Korea is powerful, right? And the more unattractive North Korea makes the prospect of an invasion, the better. Like, the basically North Korea, in order to reunify, in order to win this whole conflict, just has to keep flexing its muscles and not do anything crazy enough that it justifies a full attack. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's kind of what, and they've succeeded at doing that so far. Like, they've come very close a number of times to pushing too far and causing an intervention. Obviously, sending all the troops over the border in 1950 caused an intervention. Now, they fought to a stalemate, but they don't want to do that again if they don't have to.
Right.
Also, you know, China and Russia are their biggest trading partners. And in fact, because North Korea is like not part of the international community and has like no standards or regulations on what you can make there, like apparently like huge factories in North Korea make most of China's like illegal drugs, like meth.
Whoa.
That's a huge export of theirs to China. And also like millions of dollars of counterfeit U.S. money that ended up in China was manufactured in North Korea and sent there. And in return, they get like resources and new technology. Like, apparently a pretty large amount of North Koreans now have smartphones.
Huh.
And they think, they all say that they're North Korean made self smartphones, but really they're Chinese smartphones that are just like screwed together in North Korea.
What are the odds that that's the truth about the nuclear weapons as well?
Not high. It's okay. Very likely that they do have nuclear weapons.
They worked that out.
Nuclear weapons intelligence people from the international community who are looking at it from the outside are like, nah, they probably have them. And they're like, maybe they're lying, but they, with where they're at, it's likely they'll have them. If not now, then very soon. Mm. It's the same with the missile thing. They're showing us they have the missiles because they have them. They're not pretending they have the missiles. Like, it would probably be worse if you pretended that you had a nuke and then you didn't than if you actually did. I mean, I guess it wouldn't matter if it came to the point where you're going to use the nuke, but...
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's the situation. It's even though the country is kind of a clown fiesta weird goon show, it's a very real thing that they're trying to do. And the fucking guy from The Apprentice is probably not gonna treat this with a very deft pair of hands.
Right. But what if he is playing them? What if this whole thing, this whole Donald Trump hot take, Richard?
Go on, yeah, I can feel it. Vladimir
Putin wants Trump to be president of the U.S.
Oh, shit.
So that North Korea starts acting up.
Oh, crap. Oh, fuck. You're going there.
And then the international community's like...
Yes.
Uh-oh.
The Chinese Mets kicking in. I can see it. The North Korean
and
Mets.
And then... Japan, Richard.
Oh,
Japan rises again.
Yes.
The land of the rising sun.
Yes.
They come back and... That's as far as I got.
Nice. It's like fucking Game of Thrones, but for real.
Yeah.
Yeah. Except we're all living it.
Oh, yeah. God.
Yeah. So,
wow.
So
okay.
As we move forward, I would encourage everyone to like keep an eye on what South Korea is doing as well as North Korea. And just know that like sometimes people are like, this is literally something somebody said, like major people in major newspapers. They're like, North Korea is just developing nukes so that it has a bargaining chip, so it's going to give away the nukes. It's going to be like, okay, we'll disarm our nukes if you guys give us a bunch of money and aid.
Mm.
It's like, No, that's not what they're doing. They're not they're not building nukes just so that they can give them to you for money.
Right.
They're fucking using them for a real purpose, which is to flex their muscles and show strength and be like how you know, like certain like flowers grow all kinds of crazy spines and shit, so people are like, "Oh, that's just not worth eating," you know? It's right. kind of like that. They're right. just going to look like way more trouble than they're worth to deal with, and then they're going to just quietly take over the other half of the Korean Peninsula, which, you know, probably people wouldn't care about that much if it looks like too much trouble. You know what right. I mean? That's what they're kind of counting on in the long game, I think. They're counting on NATO and the U.S. just not thinking it's worth it to let them slowly take over South Korea.
Right.
That's what's happening.
Wow. And we should go.
Yeah, absolutely we should go. I want to ride the water slide. Yeah. Did you know that it costs like $30 to go into the water park? And if you pay, you get to go in front of all the Koreans. If you're North a foreigner, because you pay more to go in if you're a tourist. And so you get to go to the front of the line in front of all the Korean kids. Like, you literally are like, out of the way, kid. And you have your own line and you go first.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that seems worth it to me.
I know.
It's, what is it? A $3,000 flight to Hong Kong and a $1,000 visa to North Korea?
Is that how much it is?
That's how much it was, yeah.
Hmm. I think it's cheaper now. They said $200 US a day. I don't know about the visa. I guess you have to get to China.
You have to get a visa. You have to get a thing.
You do have to get a visa.
Yeah. You have to get permission to go.
Okay, well, let's fire up the old website and start this right here, live in front of everybody.
Yeah, we haven't started crowdfunding for our podcast yet, but we're going to start our crowdfunding campaign for our North Korea.
We should have that as a flex goal. When we do finally, if we do ever start a crowdfunding campaign for the podcast, if we raise $6,000, Jamie and I will go to Korea.
Right.
North Korea.
Here's the issue. By that time, we will have put this podcast on the air. And I don't think at that point it's wise to go to North Korea.
Yeah, right. Right. That's fair. Also, yeah. There's a sort of a chance that the only people listening to this will be like the mutated crows after the nuclear holocaust.
Yeah. What did Trump say? Fire and fury and, frankly, power. What a ridiculous fucking statement.
He has early stage dementia. I'm fully on board with that theory.
He's 75, isn't he? 70?
Like he doesn't really know what he's saying at any given moment.
How old
anymore.
Is he? He's like in
his
70s.
He's in his mid-70s. 73, 74?
Looks great, though.
Okay, well.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, that's okay. Where we are.
North Korea.
North Korea, baby.
Huh. Pyongyang. The empty city.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. Okay. I want to be a part of it. Pyongyang. These little town shoes were made on a mountain where an eagle dropped him off. Pyongyang. We got to work on this duet.
Yeah.
If we're going to do it for Kim Jong-un. We're going to do this duet for Kim Jong-un. We really need to step this up.
Yeah, you're right. Richard, thank you once again.
You're welcome, Jamie. If you have enjoyed this, please, you know, sound off, leave us a comment, send us an email, explaintojamie@gmail.com. Twitter, @explainjamie.
Facebook, explainjamie.
Just Google it.
Throw it into Google.
Jamie, I just whack the microphone. That's the first rule of podcast club. You do not smack the microphone.
Thanks so much for listening. Go check out our other episodes if you haven't had the chance to. Some of them are pretty good.
Nice. Wow, nice. Thank God you didn't use that level of commitment on our tourism North Korea app. That's paying our big bucks right now.
Yeah, well, there are. Yeah, they feed us.
Yeah.
Share this with your friends.
Share this with your friends.
First and foremost, if you liked it, share it around. Yeah. It does a lot of good for us.
Until next time,
I'm Rich.
Pyongyang. If I can make it there, I'll make it anywhere. It's up to you, Pyongyang.